The following recording is offered by the Village Zendo. For more information, please visit villagezendo.org.
So good evening to people who were good enough to be here at the Zendo tonight, and to all of you who are good enough to tune in at home to our first in-person Fusatsu service in more than 2 years. Feels a little bit shocking not to be wearing a mask, but I home tested about, 2.5 hours ago, and the result was negative, so I feel pretty safe leaving my mask off for the sake of clarity, but taking that mask off, I felt a little shiver go up my spine. It's sort of like the reveal. That's an old burlesque term, when the last bit of clothing and protective covering comes off. Shocking. So I home tested so that I could take my mask off for this talk and protect the people who are here in person tonight. And one thing that the COVID epidemic has taught us is interdependence. So my decision to pretest has an effect on everyone here. My decision whether to wear a mask or not to wear a mask has implications for everyone who comes in contact with me, and their decisions likewise affect my health and safety. People who decided to come tonight and take service positions during the Fusatsu service, well, thanks to their decision, we had a Fusatsu service. What you saw just now would not have appeared without the effort of each person in this Zendo. And it would not be appearing without the support of everyone who's tuning in at home. There would be no one at home to see our efforts. Once someone in Texas decides to take it upon himself and spray automatic gunfire to a bunch of 10-year-olds in a school building, that affects not just that community, that affects us. That affects our mental landscape, how we see the world, and how we respond will affect the world around us. The same for one country invading another has an effect on everybody. So all this is sort of a long-winded way of saying, are we individual beings going about our lives? Or are we one thing, one universal sangha where everyone's action affects the lives and the well-being of everyone else? Our answer to that question simply depends on a perspective that we adopt. So at one extreme, someone can say, well, it's my freedom. I can wear a mask. I cannot wear a mask. I can buy a gun. I cannot buy a gun. It's my life. I'll do what I want to with it. At the other extreme, we can say everything is one throughout space and time. It's all empty. So there is no right or wrong. There is no self or individuals out there. What might not be apparent is this is just our linear discursive mind trying to grasp what cannot be grasped, which is simply this. Are we one? Are we many? Are we all in this together? Are we all individuals leading our separate lives? Everyone within the sound of my voice has had the direct experience of the truth themselves. The perspective you wish to adopt at this moment will affect simply how you perceive things at this moment. In a similar way, during Fusatsu, as in much of our Zen study and Zen presentation, we present the interplay of oneness and manyness, the undivided nature of oneness and manyness. Master Mumon wrote, if you are enlightened, everything is one. If you are deluded, everything is different and separate. If you are deluded, everything is one. If you are enlightened, everything is different and separate. In that verse, he was directly pointing to the undivided nature of absolute and relative oneness and manyness. And so it is with our Fusatsu service. So we begin from the perspective of oneness. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Now, I atone for it all. Now, I'm at one with it all, not separate in any way from what happened in Texas, what happened in Pennsylvania, not separate in any way from the people who committed those atrocities. Do I need to have an opinion about them, like they're evil monsters, or they must be in terrible pain to do something like that? I don't feel I need to make those kinds of judgments. I simply need to allow myself to be affected, to be one with all the evil karma, to allow the evil karma to come in and open my heart, crash through the hard shell of self. When I don't put up a fight, when I'm not trying to justify myself or pretend that I'm some wonderful being and all of that ego stuff, and just allow myself to be here with all the evil karma throughout space and time, then it's my responsibility. And because it's my responsibility in this world of oneness, it's the responsibility of each and every person who is listening to this talk. And to those who aren't listening to this talk, whether they know it or not, it can't be my responsibility without it being your responsibility, vice versa. And because we've acknowledged our fundamental identity with all the evil karma ever committed throughout space and time, then we get to move on to the next aspect of oneness. Not only am I one with the guy with the automatic rifle, I'm also one with all the Buddhas and ancestors throughout space and time, all the Bodhisattvas. I'm one with the past seven Buddhas, one with Shakyamuni Buddha. I'm one with the wisdom of Manjushri Bodhisattva, the constancy of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, the compassion of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Of course, when we identify these energies under these various archetypes, we realize they're simply our own life taking place in the here and now. And yes, just as we are Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. As Suzuki Roshi said, each of us is a Buddha, perfect and complete. And each of us needs a little work. And then we get on to the work. After we've opened ourselves to our oneness with all the horror and all the marvelousness of the world and our humanity, then we act. We take the four vows. We make our intention to save all beings manifest. Our intention to enter each and every one of the boundless Dharma gates. Our intention to attain the unattainable Buddha Dharma. So, in our conventional way of thinking, we think, okay, well, now I've atoned for my evil karma by being at one. I've, in a way, purified myself. And I've identified with all the energies of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas throughout space and time. Now I've done all that stuff, and now I'm ready to go out and act. Do the four vows. Ready to raise the Bodhi mind, penetrate the sutras, and lead and be led by the Sangha. I'm ready for all that good stuff now. But of course, we realize that's only a convention of the linear and discursive mind. Actually, there's no separation between living the Bodhisattva vows and being one with the Buddhas and ancestors. It's not a matter of saying, hey, I'm one with the Buddhas and ancestors. It's a matter of being the Buddhas and ancestors in your own life. Therefore, once again, the relative and the absolute intermingle. So being one with the Buddhas doesn't mean you're in contact with some essence separate from your activities in the world. Being one with the Buddha is to act as best you can, like a Buddha. Being one with the energies of all the ancestors means to act with their compassion, with their energy, with their sincerity, with their devotion to the beings of the world. There's not a separation between our activities and our oneness. The oneness that doesn't change. The absolute works together with the relative, like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. And so it's all a matter of realizing who we are, which sounds like a mental adjustment, but it's far more like that, more than that. We recognize who we are by how we behave, by how we act, by how we treat other people, by how we treat the world that we're not separate from. And as in everything else, this is a process, even though we're intrinsically Buddhas and we don't become more Buddhas after our years of practice. Through practice, we manifest Buddha and we learn more and more what it is to manifest Buddha. Of course, it's not a thing that we learn to start off with when we set out to keep the precepts. You know, we do as best we do it mentally. Am I killing? Am I stealing? Am I misusing sex? What does that mean? And so on and so forth. This is absolutely indispensable part of our practice. And yet, if we linger there, we will forever be separate from the precepts. We'll be ever trying to attain something, Buddhahood, goodness, whatever we think, enlightenment, whatever we think we're trying to attain. So we start out being very preoccupied with the precepts, learning them, memorizing them, judging ourselves against them. And as I say, that is absolutely indispensable. Nothing wrong with that at all. But a funny thing happens over time. As the years of practice roll by and body and mind keep falling away and falling away, and we soften and our own hearts and minds are not as separate from the hearts and minds of other people and the great earth as they used to be. And we find that the precepts are us. They're not something out there we have to conform to. They're what flows from our own heart. They flow from our own breast, as Sui Feng learned upon the occasion of his great enlightenment. So we keep the precepts, and we are kept by the precepts. We wear the vast robe of liberation, and we are held by the vast robe of liberation. And more, there doesn't seem to be something to attain, just something to practice. It's the practice of who we are, each and every moment of our lives. This body and mind fall away. And less we venture out into the world trying to confirm the self and allow the beings of the world to advance and to confirm our own life, to confirm our life as the life of the world. And so the second precept, I think, really points us in the direction of this process, non-stealing. We feel there's, when we steal, we feel there's something we need to attain. There's something we need to get. In a way, all of us get into Zen as kind of robbers. We're trying to grab a piece of enlightenment for ourselves. It's a good place to start. And then the practice works its magic on us moment by moment, day after day, year after year. And we find we had it all to begin with. Everything we thought we wanted to get for ourselves was already fully present in our Buddha mind and Bodhisattva heart. From the day we walked into the Zendo, started torturing our legs in Zazen, it was already there. Bodhidharma says self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the unattainable Dharma, not trying to gain anything is the precept of non-stealing. Now, Dogen makes the same point. He says, the things of the world are just as they are. The gate of liberation is open, just as we are. We are one with the Buddhas, the ancestors, the Bodhisattvas, just as we are. But just as we are is practice. It's not a matter of being able to sit still, because we're all of the same empty nature. We have to practice moment by moment. There's nothing solid to attain. Our Buddhahood manifest directly through our sincere and wholehearted practice. And finally, the Zen peacemakers say, being satisfied with what I have. This is the precept of non-stealing. Being satisfied with what I have. What am I supposed to be satisfied with? What do I have? I have nothing. Nothing to hold on to. Nothing solid. And yet, I have everything. I'm one with all the Buddhas throughout space and time. That's kind of hard to be. Being satisfied with what I have. Being old. Having to huff and puff when I'm doing those bows. Having to mask up every time I go indoors. Taking care of myself and others by masking up. By showing up here and doing this service. By wearing a mask when I go back down into the subway. Although many people are not wearing masks anymore. So we sit there in the great Dharmakaya, affecting and being affected by each other. How will you respond? How will you practice? What is there to attain?